in response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Monday edition of Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We thank you for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman, and we're going to be here with this particular program for the next hour and 20, roughly 4 minutes, 24 minutes. Ed Battagliano joins me in studio. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson's in Studio Venus.
Yes, good morning. All is well.
Social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
From us here. Ed's already had the COVID.
And I blame President Trump. I mean, everyone blames President Trump for everything. The hurricanes, California fires.
That's right.
I'm blaming him for my
COVID.
COVID.
You came within 1,000 miles of the president.
That's right. And so. He was not wearing a mask.
There you go.
At the time.
Ed, if you didn't know, Ed did it. Would you have it for 2 weeks? Or?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tested positive on September 1st. And had virtually no symptoms for the first 8 days. And I thought, man, I'm going to be one of those that's going to be very asymptomatic. I had a little bit of a cough and was feeling kind of tired. That's why I just on a lark went and got tested. And they said, no, you got it. And then on the eighth night, man, that thing opened up on me, the virus, both barrels, man. I had high fever, 102, and fever and chills. It was pretty bad for several days, and then my fever wouldn't go away for nearly a week. So,
and your oxygen level dropped down to 32. Did it?
not quite that bad.
You know, that's freezing too.
Yeah, it was. Normally, it's about 98%. I have good oxygen saturation. It dropped overnight to 90%, and that was
really
pretty scary.
Yeah, below that, you got to go to the hospital, right?
Yeah, and my fever was 102, and the doctor said if you keep taking Tylenol, if it doesn't go down, you got to go to the emergency room. And it went down, thank the Lord. So
amen. Amen. So, all right, that's been a few weeks ago now.
Yeah. I'm
back
3 weeks away from having had fever.
Fred and I have not had it, or if we had it, we didn't know it.
I guess.
Yeah.
We just motoring on here.
All right, Fred, speaking of COVID,
yeah.
There's a very famous person.
Yeah, no kidding.
He was going through this. Go ahead, talk.
Yeah,
about
the president checked in to the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, on Friday, and at the time, the medical people were a little bit concerned with some of his vitals at that point. So they said they were going to take him over to Walter Reed, and they could monitor him there. But he continued on being the president, carrying out presidential duties. Now. We should know, they say, within a few hours, whether the president will be heading back to the White House because he's made some improvement over the weekend, they say. He's feeling much better. In fact, his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, was on Fox and Friends this morning to give us the latest update. Cut number 7.
He continued to improve overnight, and his health continues to improve. The doctors will actually have an evaluation sometime late morning, and then the president, in consultation with the doctors, will make a decision on whether to discharge him later today. We're still optimistic that based on his unbelievable progress and how strong he's been in terms of his fight against this COVID-19 disease, that he will be released, but that decision won't mm-hmm. be made until later today.
It's kind of interesting. One of the stories coming out on the weekend was that the doctors there at Walter Reed are treating him with some drugs that you and I probably wouldn't get at our local doctor's office. And Regeneron, I think, is one of them. And it hasn't been approved yet by the FDA, but it has been tested extensively. And it's kind of a, I guess you would call it a super-duper antibody enhancement drug, and according to Mark Meadows, that treatment schedule appears to be working well at this point. But as I say, we'll know a little bit more firmly about what's going to happen today, but I think it's the president's intent, if he gets the okay from the doctors, to head back to the White House.
Well, I'm guessing that if that happens today, the news media will claim that the president is ignoring the science and going back to the White House too early. You know, the president, if he steps off a curb with his right foot, the media will say he should have used his left foot. My understanding is that the medical professionals that surround the president, and they've been tested and on a regular basis since this whole thing started, that they were following all the proper procedures in terms of working, in terms, you know, wearing the masks and the social distancing, doing all those kinds of things. But the news media just won't give them a break. You know, they're acting as though the president caused this and put all sorts of people at risk. Well, so he's not going to catch a break when it comes to the media.
All right, you want my opinion on this thing?
Absolutely.
I guess that's why I'm here.
That's what this show is all about.
This is not medical advice. This is not scientific data. This is just spitting it out.
Yeah, okay.
Which is probably not a good metaphor.
Please turn to
the
right.
Yeah, I know, that's probably
right.
True.
You're
thought about
spin anything
that.
Out.
You know, I probably shouldn't have said that during COVID. This is a virus. It's going around. It's unavoidable altogether. Are altogether unavoidable. What I mean by that is there is no, except if you, unless you want to go live on a mountain somewhere, but if you're going to have interaction with people, then a virus going around is likely you're going to have it sometime. So even practicing social distancing or mask wearing or anything like that. I don't mean to sound fatalistic on that point, but I mean, that's just a reality because all it takes is a couple of people to slip up,
right?
If that's what you want to call it, in your circle, even as tight as the White House is. You're telling me they're social distancing every day. I saw pictures the other day,
right,
of the White House staff out on the lawn as the president departed for Walter Reed. You may have seen this picture. It was about 8 or 10 of them. And they were 3 feet away, 2 feet away.
Yeah.
Of course, they were outside and they had masks on. But I'm just saying, if they were inside in the hallway talking to one another,
they're not going to be 6 feet away.
I'm just saying that's not normal for human interaction. We're all having to learn that.
Right.
And so, I am surprised, I guess, that the president got it and the first lady, but I'm not surprised if one or the other got it because they would, you know, obviously they're married and live together. But just, it's just, to me, it's one of those things, a virus without a vaccine going around the world, just almost impossible to avoid it.
Right.
So that's my thoughts on it. Hope and pray that the president is recovering and gets back completely healthy. Although it does worry me some that the president might experience what you did, Ed.
Yeah.
That is mild symptoms for a few days and then boom. And he's 74 years old.
Because part of the danger is, and Fred, you talked about this in our story meeting. Why don't you go ahead and explain just briefly. I know you're not a doctor either.
Nope.
But the body responds to the virus and that response sometimes is the danger.
Yeah, the virus comes in, gets in the lungs, attacks the lungs, and then what happens is as the virus begins to duplicate itself, the body's natural immune system goes to work. And what happens is in the lungs there's little sacs where the oxygen and carbon dioxide exchange, and those little sacs called alveoli get filled up with fluid as our immune system attacks the virus. And so when those alveoli get filled up with fluid, that causes you to have difficulty breathing. That oxygen exchange cannot take place with that fluid there. So that is why. And that's another reason, another part of the concoction the president is being treated for is to drastically reduce that fluid buildup in those alveoli. And apparently, so far, it appears to be working for him.
When's the next debate?
The next debate is, well, the presidential debate is the 15th.
The vice presidential debate is Wednesday.
Is this Wednesday.
Okay, so the 15th. So how long do you have to quarantine?
It's, 14 days, Ed, from the time of diagnosis?
Because some of this is changing.
Yeah.
For me, it was supposed to be 10 days and then an additional 72 hours, 3 days after your last fever.
Yes.
So I don't know what the president has been experiencing on that kind of level, but he's supposed to quarantine for 10 days from the first test, positive test, and then you go by when your symptoms subside, and then you go a few more days.
And do you have to have a couple of negative results in tests? I think that plays
I was not told to be. I was told not to be retested.
Okay.
In fact, they would not do the rapid test unless I had symptoms.
Okay.
So when you're symptom-free, you do not get retested.
So that's what the reason I'm asking. If you're talking about the second presidential debate being the 15th of October, and the president has to quarantine for 10 days,
That would take us up to the 12th because he was diagnosed, I think, late last Thursday night, early Friday morning is when the announcement was made.
All right. Well, this is assuming he doesn't have more severe symptoms like Ed did seven days into it.
Right.
Because that could put him out for the debate right there is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is scheduled for the 15th. Tell us about, so we got a VP. Are you looking forward to the VP debate Wednesday? Are you going to watch that, Ed?
I will. After church, I think it's going to probably be 8 o'clock, so I'll have plenty of time to get back after church. I think this one, most of the vice presidential debates are not usually big showstoppers and don't draw a lot of viewers. I think one of the exceptions was actually Biden and Sarah Palin, because Sarah Palin was kind of a media magnet. She attracted a lot of attention. But I think this one's going to be important because of the age of Joe Biden and the feeling, I think, even though he did very well during the last debate in terms of dispelling perhaps a lot of doubts about his mental acuity, but I think there are concerns about his age, and the belief is that Kamala Harris is going to either finish out his first term, or if he makes it to the end of his first term, Joe Biden will not run for re-election. So I think that Pence and Harris is going to be a pretty good debate. And I'm looking forward to Mike Pence pressing Senator Harris on the whole idea of packing the Supreme Court. I hope that Susan Page from USA Today, who is supposed to be the moderator, I hope she presses Kamala Harris on that. I don't think she should be allowed to get away with saying that's a diversion. I'm not going to answer that question.
Well, I already know how Kamala Harris is going to answer that question. And here's why. Because cut number two, we're going to play for you right now. She's already been asked that question by Lawrence O'Donnell, and you're going to hear her response. Cut number two.
If Judge Barrett is confirmed and the Democrats have control of the Senate next year and the White House and the House of Representatives, should the Supreme Court be expanded?
I think that, first of all, Joe's been very clear that he is going to pay attention to the fact, and I'm with him on this 1,000%, pay attention to the fact that right now, Lawrence, people are voting.
Gee, that was definitive.
I'm conservative. I don't know if that comes across.
Sometimes you let it slip.
But I try to be fair. I try to. It's hard. When you have a viewpoint, it's hard to sometimes be fair with the other side. I'm just not impressed with her. Speaking, I'm not impressed with her articulation. I'm not impressed with her politics, certainly. But, you know, maybe if I were on the other side, I'd say, oh, she's perfectly fine. But that kind of answer right there, did you hear that? I was just very pathetic. Can you be very pathetic as opposed to just being pathetic? I don't know.
Listen, according to my wife, I've been very pathetic before. No,
I'm just
kidding.
I just don't think she's impressive as a VP candidate.
Well, but she didn't impress Democratic voters in the primaries either. She only got like 1%. I mean, she was really in that lower tier of support for amongst that large
field. She just sounds like me if I were running. I don't know.
She's not an inspiring speaker. Fred, let you jump in here. She's not an inspiring speaker.
I agree with him. I agree with Joe. Going. Okay. First of all, when you're running for president, in my opinion, you should not refer to your leader of your party as Joe in a question like that. You say, well, former Vice President Biden, or that's just my I know that's a I'm being picky right there, but I'm just saying in that setting, it seems like to me she should answer it in a more respectful way of his office to project to the public.
Stature.
I know you asked Fred a question and I took over. But this is my debate.
Yes.
Okay. This is our debate and I'm taking over. And notice Fred's not talking over me.
Right.
Which is helpful. But, and then she says, Joe's been very clear. Isn't that what she, play this again. Listen to this convoluted mess.
If Judge Barrett is confirmed and the Democrats have control of the Senate next year and the White House and the House of Representatives, should the Supreme Court be expanded?
I think that, first of all, Joe's been very clear that he is going to pay attention to the fact, and I'm with him on this 1,000%, pay attention to the fact that right now, Lawrence, people are voting.
You see why I use pathetic?
Yeah, Fred, she said, first I want to say that that Joe has been very clear.
Yeah.
And then she was not very clear at all.
Well, Joe was very clear when asked that question at the debate last week.
Right.
Remember what he said? I'm not going to answer the question.
That's right.
Well, she should have said Joe has been very clear that he's not going to answer that question, and neither am I.
There you go.
Now, what else you got for me?
Yeah.
I mean, 1,000% Joe, very clear, out. People are voting.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Huh? I can do better than that. All right. What do we got next, Fred?
Well, Nancy Pelosi, let's talk about Nancy Pelosi for a minute here. Nancy Pelosi, do you think she was very sympathetic to the president's the diagnosis of COVID? I want you to have a listen to how she responded to this. Cut number three.
Over 209,000 deaths, a tragedy beyond even comprehension 1 year ago, and still more to come. But maybe this will be the moment where people will say, okay, mask, distance, sanitation, tracing, treatment, and also recognizing that many people in the minority community, people of color, disproportionately affected by this, people in the Native American community, very, very disproportionately affected by this.
What I heard in that response was President Trump was reckless. Now he's paying the impact of this. Look what his example has done to the country. And by the way, the virus is racial sensitive and attacks black people more than white people.
Listen, this happened at the debate. It's going to happen up until the election because the Democrats view the coronavirus politically as a windfall. This was a gift dropped into their lap because they can blame the president. Everything Nancy Pelosi just said right there is a lie, all right? The fact is, everything she named about masks and social distancing and all that kind of stuff, everything she named, the president has been promoting. Remember, he turned some companies loose and told them to produce the masks and the ventilators. He had military hospitals sent hospital. I mean, there were hospitals set up in Central Park that you had the governor of New York, the governor of California saying everything we asked the president for, he has done. The president made it clear from the get-go that in terms of shutting down states, that would be a decision the governor had to make because the president said, I'm not a dictator. I can't tell them what to do with their states. So it was the states that made those kinds of decisions. And everything she just said is a lie, but you're going to hear that all the way up until the election because this is, in their minds,
a gift. What's the deal about blacks and Native Americans being disproportionately affected. Why does she throw that in there?
Because they're wanting to make sure that, especially in the black community, that President Trump does not siphon off any support from the black community. Now, my understanding is that the accusation from the Democrats is that a lot of black people don't have access to health care, the same kind of health care. That's why they are disproportionately being affected by the coronavirus, which would mean 13% of the population, but 20% of the cases of coronavirus.
So is there any statistical data to support what she's saying?
Well, in fact, I don't know that.
Are the Democrats?
They would have access, even if you're poor, you'd have access to Medicaid.
That's what I'm saying. Who's denied treatment for COVID because of their skin color?
I think an answer might be that some of the preconditions, some of the comorbidities that make the coronavirus more dangerous might be higher in the black community.
I think it's scientific. It's the rate of diabetes.
But that's Trump's fault?
Yeah, apparently, according to Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
Well, I'm playing coy a little bit here because I heard an ad the other day, and it was here's the advertisement. It's a black fella. It's voice only. A black fella I was traveling, heard on the radio. A black fella, and he comes on and he says, "President Trump knew this was dangerous back when it first started." And then it plays a clip of the president saying something like to Bob Woodward about downplaying it or something like that because he didn't want people to panic. And then the guy goes on to say African Americans have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19. And what the ad ends up saying is because President Trump doesn't give a rip about African Americans, we're dying of COVID, and it's his fault. And then the ad closes with Vice President Biden's voice saying, "I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message."
Right.
It was clearly pandering to people to make them, if they didn't believe it already, to make them think that the reason the black community is being disproportionately affected by COVID is directly because Donald Trump doesn't give a rip. That was what they were saying.
Well, Fred, let me just ask you this. If COVID had not happened and the economic downturn resulting from the pandemic shutdown, what would be the main argument on the part of Democrats for why President Trump should not be reelected?
What would be that? Well, yeah. Because he's racist.
Yeah, maybe they go there.
That's he's racist.
That's not a winning argument. They would have nothing, would they?
No.
I don't know what else they would argue because the economy was doing well. COVID.
He would have beat Biden hands down.
Right.
Had COVID not hit.
Yeah. I mean, all the Russia stuff, the impeachment, all that stuff is in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They would have had nothing.
Nope.
So that's why you're going to hear this argument that Tim just talked about, that ad. You're going to hear this coronavirus, the president's fault, the economy, the result of coronavirus, all Trump's fault.
I personally think an ad like I just described, which I heard with my own ears, is insulting to black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like treating them like children. Like you don't have the ability to think critically. I'm going to tell you this. Black folks are dying because Donald Trump doesn't care about them. Vote Joe Biden.
Right.
And if you're an average thinker, you're going, come on.
Right.
Come on. We know that's not true. COVID is not the fault of Donald Trump.
Right.
We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios.
Over the weekend, there were huge rallies in D.C. for President Trump. Now, that just doesn't happen. I mean, cars and trucks driving through downtown D.C. honking, Trump flags. That just doesn't happen.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. A 16-year-old boy was told by his teacher to remove a Trump 2020 flag from his bedroom wall under the threat of punishment. The student at Colusa High School in California was in his bedroom participating in an online chemistry class when the teacher demanded the flag be taken down. She gave the kid 15 seconds to comply. The student's mother says she doesn't blame the teacher. She blames the school board for not giving clear guidance on what kids are allowed to have in the privacy of their bedrooms. And it's not just in California. A Florida fourth grader was suspended for having a BB gun in his room. The public school crowd seems to be under the impression they can govern how children behave in the privacy of their homes. They actually think they can do a better job of raising your children. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern or download my free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
By the way, we failed to mention that you can access the show on Facebook or YouTube if you want to watch the live video stream from our studios here at AFR. Just go to YouTube or Facebook and type in Today's Issues. Also on our Facebook page, we post the stories that we discuss. So you can access them for yourselves. Fred, are you aware of the breaking news? I'm being serious here.
Okay.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany has tested positive for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you knew that already?
No, it doesn't surprise me. Because of her close contact in that circle.
You know, I'm trying to break news here, Fred. and you need to say, wow.
Wow.
Your breaking news doesn't surprise me.
Thanks for that breaking news, Tim. Fred just goes, yeah, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. No, she has COVID. Of course, that doesn't surprise you because all these folks in the White House that are getting it, circle around the president,
yep,
have all been together for the last, well, they're together every day.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
I guess that means she goes into quarantine. I wonder who takes over.
She does.
Sarah off the bench?
I would just say, hey.
Retirement?
Since you don't like us, we don't like you. No press conferences.
Yeah.
Till she's out.
You know, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think that'll work well. You know, just one more thing on this, the hypocrisy of now blaming Trump for all of these cases across the country. You know, it was really interesting. Several days before the president and First Lady Melania, where the announcement came out early last Friday morning that they had tested positive, several days before that, the far-left governor of Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and his wife, Pam, it was announced that they had been diagnosed with COVID, positive tests for COVID. You know, I went and did a search this morning. I could not find one media story that said they tested positive because they've been reckless. Not one media story blaming them for the number of cases of COVID in Virginia. Not one story. So the left-wing Democrat governor of Virginia and his wife test positive. Oh, that's too bad. We hope they're feeling better soon. That's the reaction. The president and first lady, and it's all the president's fault. The whole problem in the whole country is all the president's fault.
Well, you're going to hear that for the next 30 days, 31 days, elections 30, roughly a month away from tomorrow. You're going to hear that. That's going to be pounded away. Because there's nothing else.
No. Speaking of just one more point on the media, you know, the president took a little drive outside the hospital yesterday just to thank. There's been a kind of a Republican pro-Trump rally outside the hospital since he was checked in last Friday. And so he got in one of the vehicles and he just drove around the block. And he waved from the vehicle, saying thanks to these folks that turned out to support him. I want you to listen to a montage of the media reporting on the president's trip around the block. Cut number 5.
I do think that's something that we should note here, as the president is doing this, obviously, for a PR and kind of publicity value.
So that the president could get the sort of adulation that he so desperately needs.
But this is what happens when you don't like what the people who are speaking for you are saying.
This is a man who we've seen for years now feeds off the affection of his fans and almost needs that affection.
It's classic Donald Trump, isn't it? You know, he does want to be the star of any show, or he wants to be at the center of attention.
No, he just went out to say thank you. There were even reports that he was endangering the lives of the Secret Service people who were in the vehicle with him.
Well, one of the doctors
yes,
at the hospital went public with tweets saying as much. Yeah. What the doctor said was, you have a van, or if that's what you want to call it, an SUV. It's airtight, bulletproof, and you got a guy with COVID 3 feet away from Secret Service agents, and that was reckless.
Yeah,
to put them in danger like that.
Well, as somebody said,
I think that's a legitimate criticism.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to get blasted by our listeners here. I think what I just said is a legitimate criticism, but understanding there were some caveats to this, which Fred's going to tell us right here. Go ahead.
Well, as somebody pointed out, there were Secret Service and other personnel on Marine One that took him over to the hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to have that. There are Secret Service people watching him while he's in the hospital.
Yeah.
And they did take, by the way, they did take extra precautions before he got in that vehicle to make sure these people were well protected. So. It's just another thing. Whatever the president does, he's going to be criticized.
I know, and I know the media hate him, and everything they say they want to. But sometimes he gives them ammunition that they don't have to have. That's my thoughts. You know,
he certainly could have done a video thanking them that could have been released to the media or something. I would say this though, that montage. Obviously, they are projecting what they believe the president is thinking and feeling. He needs the adulation. He's desperate for it. There's an equally plausible reason for him going to see them, and that is that he's truly thankful for their support and their prayers.
How you look at it.
That is not the job of the media. The media's job is to report the facts, maybe report on what you said, Tim, that perhaps this wasn't the wisest decision in light of blah, 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 blah. But to sit there and continually say, I can read what's in his mind and his heart, that's not the job of
a journalist. I also don't think it's the doctors. I forgot the fellow's name at the hospital. They call it the visiting, attending. I forgot the proper name. Anyway, he's a big deal at the Walter Reed. He should not. It wasn't his place
right,
to go on social media and comment on the motivations or the not the motivations of the president's actions.
Right.
In my opinion, he just should have kept his mouth shut. Just do your doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor's work. But it, as a lot of things are with President Trump, it's how you look at it and how you feel about him before you hear of an incident, what his motivations are. For example, I'm just saying I wouldn't have done it because you're giving the media more ammunition to go after you. Of course, they're going to go after him anyway. I don't know. Just that's my own thoughts. So you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Yeah, the Secret Service, I guess the couple of agents that were there in the armored vehicle with the president did volunteer to go with him. Maybe they had already had COVID.
Right. You know? I mean, that's what a journalist is supposed to discuss or figure out, not say, I think what the president did was wrong because he wants adulation. He needs it. He soaks it up like a sponge. They should have asked, well, did they have to, you know, did these...
Tell me what president doesn't need adulation. Huh?
Yeah, you're saying that that's part and parcel of
every
wanting to run for
politician
president.
I know got huge egos.
Yeah.
They can act humble, but they got a huge ego. Most all of them, as do a lot of humans.
Right.
I got an ego. You got an ego. So, I mean, I just think that
all
that's...
All I can say is let go of my ego. See what I did there, Fred?
Yeah, I saw what you did.
Yeah, they're very clever.
I don't know. It just... With President Trump, it's the media, the mainstream media, and the social media, and Hollywood, and they just hate the man's guts, and so he can't do anything right, and everything he does is motivated by his Satanism. I guess I don't know what they. Of course, these people don't believe in Satan, so. They call him hateful and evil and white supremacist and all these things. That those are his motivations for living, according to the left, and that's what they project every day.
Well, I'm certainly glad that these television analysts don't have an ego.
Don't have egos,
right? They don't need adulation. They don't love it when people come up to them and say, "Hey, can I have your
autograph?" This reminds me of the Chris Cuomo from CNN when he came out of his COVID. They CNN's filming him walking up the stairs to hug his wife and family, and it's like a reunion or something like that. It was just bogus. I mean, I mean, I'm sure they. It's just like so staged, is what I want to say. I'm not sure they missed each other. I'm just saying everything is staged, and he's the. But imagine if President Trump had come up after COVID to hug Melania, they'd have said, look at him, he just wants adulation.
Yes, that's
right.
He wants his wife's adulation.
Yeah. So, listen, when you're Donald Trump and you've been, for 10 years, I think his show was number one or near the top, The Apprentice. Been a billionaire, successful businessman. He's had adulation. I don't know that he needs adulation for getting in a van and waving at folks who are at the hospital, rallying behind him and supporting him, praying for him.
He loves being out amongst people. That's why he loves these big rallies. And now, of course, the media says, well, that's part of the adulation. No, he loves firing up his base and being out there with the people. And so, it's a separate issue about whether he should have left the hospital with these agents. Yeah. But I, you can just as easily say the president really wanted to express his gratefulness to the people who supported him while he went through probably a pretty harrowing experience that first day or two.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim with Ed and Fred, and we thank you for listening to AFR. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, breaking news. There is no such thing as voter fraud. Have you heard that?
Yeah, we have heard it, Fred. That's not breaking news.
Yeah.
We're not surprised by that at all.
No such thing. Well, Florida man, he says he wanted to test the system. So recently he sent in looking for an absentee ballot for his wife. Like this was just in the last couple of weeks. There's one problem. His wife died in 2018. So he signed it off, the whole thing. But they have a check system. He lives in a community just south of Tampa, Florida. They checked it out and sure enough did some cross-checking. And they found out that indeed she died in 2018. Now, he's been arrested. It's felony, by the way. faces a fine, I think, of up to $1,500.
And could be 5 years in prison.
It could be 5 years in prison. But what he's going to tell the judge is, I was just testing the system. That's all. I just wanted to see if it worked.
How is the voter roll cleansed of people who've deceased?
I assume when someone passes away, the information is given to the government because there's a record kept of I guess through obituaries, etc. So there is a record of someone passing away.
Yeah, you got to compare list A with list B.
Yeah,
and that's and a lot of states don't do that on a regular basis, and that's why you hear accusations. We need to clear
it's like a Baptist church.
Yes, that's a perfect example. They got people on the rolls from 15 years ago. Also, people who move out of state.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be able to keep track of people so that people who move out of state can't get a Florida, you know, ballot.
Now, I have a question for you guys. Do you think this gentleman, Larry Wiggins is his name, by the way, 62 years old. Do you think if the system failed, that he would own up and say, oh, by the way, I was just testing so my wife doesn't get a vote?
You know what, though? I don't know. That kind of thing, what is it? That kind of thing would happen a handful of times around the country. That's not going to affect the vote. I guess voter fraud is an issue that we need to watch out for, but you're going to give me something to me that's can be done in mass.
That's my worry. This is Larry Wiggins. Now, we don't know what his real motivation was. He says, I was just testing the system. I'll let Florida figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's someone requesting an absentee ballot for his, in this case, his wife. That, like, to your point,
Deceased wife.
Well, his deceased wife. But
big difference.
The process is my wife can't come and ask for herself. But so, to your point, that can only be done a handful of times. I'm more concerned with massive mail-outs to people at their last known address, and then the ballot harvesting.
Yep.
Those two things are more worrisome to me.
Yeah.
And there's report after report after report. There was a report last week. I'm not sure where the jurisdiction was, but this guy said, you know what? There were a whole bunch of absentee ballots that were mailed out. I got one for a person that lives down the street three or four doors. So the potential, the more of these that you send out, these ballots, and we have states that are sending out millions of these things, the potential for fraud, certainly we can say, increases dramatically.
Well, our own Abraham Hamilton III said that, because he's been living in Mississippi, what now, for 5 years, whatever, he got a ballot from Louisiana.
Yeah.
And it was forwarded to his address here in Mississippi. So he could technically, he could vote in Louisiana and in Mississippi.
Yeah.
And now
That's illegal.
Abe won't do that.
No.
But you worry about other people who might. And they say, I was just testing the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we really need a clear winner on November 3rd.
Yeah.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be a mess after that, potentially. And, you know, I just hope we have a clear winner.
Now, we will have coverage on Election Day on American Family Radio.
Yes, we will.
And we always look forward to going home afterwards and knowing who won. But the likelihood of that seems to be shrinking if this is going to be a close election.
In 2016, we went home at, 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
And we were waiting on Broward County. Remember that?
You're talking about 2000?
Florida.
2000.
Florida in 2000 with Bush
and
Gore?
No, I'm talking about 16. Broward County in Florida is notorious for waiting 24 hours after an election to report their results. Just see how many Democrat votes they need.
Right.
But Broward County, I'm kidding about that, but Broward County does, they do delay a long time. And the election commissioner got fired down there by the governor.
Yeah.
Because this had been a multi-time problem.
Yeah, multiple elections.
But I think we were late on 2016. We stayed up late because Hillary refused to concede. You remember what happened that night?
Yeah, President Obama had to call her and tell her you need to concede.
Yeah.
He did.
Huh? And she wouldn't come out. She
Can
wouldn't.
You imagine President right. Obama talking to somebody going, you know, I'm going to have to call her. I don't want to. I'm going to put the phone out 2 feet from my ear. But I'm going to have to tell
Someone's going to have to tell her.
Somebody's got to tell her that she lost and she's going to have to concede. Because remember John Podesta, her campaign manager, came out about it and said, we're not going to concede. We're not going to we'll be back with you in the morning.
Yeah.
And then what 30 minutes later, it was said that President Obama called Hillary Clinton and said, no, you got to concede.
Right.
So you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Fred.
Yes, I was listening to AFR Talk on Saturday morning in one of the great programs we have. A lot of folks don't know, we have terrific programs on the weekend as well. And one of the programs I was listening to was the Christian Worldview, and it was between 8:30 and 9 Central Time on Saturday morning. And the host started talking a little bit about the critical race theory, and we've talked about this quite a bit on this program. And basically, just a thumbnail sketch what critical race theory is. Basically, if you're born a white person, whether you know it or not, you are born a racist, and you're responsible for the racism.
And you can never change.
And you
will
always be a never racist. Change.
A lot of hope in that.
Yes.
Yes.
Hope
but
and
I,
change.
I, the host went on to say that he is very concerned that critical race theory thinking has entered into the evangelical community. And to make his point, he played a clip of well-known Christian author, Gospel Coalition leader, Tim Keller. Very famous guy. A lot of folks have his books. I want you to listen to this clip. Now, the host of the program trying to make the point that this thinking, critical race theory thinking, has entered into the evangelical community. You have a listen to this. It's cut number 6.
Studies have shown, have pretty much proven, that if you have white skin, it's worth $1 million over a lifetime over somebody who doesn't have white skin. And that's because of historical forces that have come about. And at this point, you know, you could go at it several ways. One, as I mentioned, if you have that asset of white skin right now, historical asset, then you actually have to say, I didn't deserve this. And also, to some degree, I'm the product of, I'm standing on the shoulders of other people who got that through injustice. So the Bible actually says, yes, you are involved in injustice. And even if you didn't actually do it, therefore you have a responsibility, not just to say, well, you know, maybe if I get around to it, maybe we could do something about the poor people out there. No, you're part of the problem. If you do actually let your understanding of responsibility be shaped by the Bible instead of American individualism.
That's ridiculous. Huh?
I don't even know what to say.
I was shocked.
That was Tim Keller?
That was Tim Keller. I recognize his
voice.
When
did he do that? When did he say that?
I'm not sure what the dating on it is.
Who was, by the way, it's just a side point. Who was interviewing him? Who was the...
This was a audio cut played by on the Christian World.
Oh, okay.
Program.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Listen, first of all, the Bible does not teach what he said. Okay. Second of all, this is my belief in terms. People say, do you believe in white privilege in America? And this is my answer. I will agree there is white privilege in America. If you will agree there is black privilege in Uganda, Russian privilege in Russia, and Mexican privilege in Mexico. What Tim Keller is saying is that, yes, in countries that are a majority of fill in the blank, human nature takes over and you may get an advantage. You speak the language, you're the same as the majority. People naturally look with suspicion at people who are a little different. If you will say there's black privilege in Uganda, I will say there's white privilege in the United States. Are you telling me that a white person, solely because of the color of their skin, is going to move to Uganda and that's going to be worth $1 million just because it's white skin? That's ludicrous. And shame on Tim Keller for not only selling that garbage, but then blaming it on the Bible.
Well, that's what upset me the most. If Tim Keller had said, here's my opinion.
Yeah.
But when he said the Bible teaches this, and you notice he didn't give a reference.
Right.
Now, the Bible calls upon us to give of our resources to someone less fortunate. Now, the Bible does teach that. But the Bible doesn't say it's my fault that other people are poor.
By virtue of your skin color.
By virtue of my skin color.
Listen, the Bible does talk about justice and injustice, but that has to do with God's standards of righteousness. When the Bible talks about justice, it is not talking about LGBTQ claims and demands for justice. It is talking about God's righteousness. God's righteous standards should be applied. The Bible does say you should, in the Old Testament, says you should neither favor the rich nor the poor. And it says that you should not be, you should not engage in partiality. The book of James talks about the fact that you shouldn't favor rich people over the poor. It does say those kinds of things, but it's talking about God's standards of righteousness. You should not have unequal scales. You shouldn't cheat people. All that stuff is in the Bible. But what Tim Keller is saying is a non-biblical argument he's making, and he's claiming the Bible backs it up. Listen, Fred, when you say he doesn't give a reference, a biblical reference, I guarantee that Tim Keller can find references, but you have to twist the scripture to fit your ideology, and that's what's happening with far too many in the evangelical community.
You know, to go back to the original point of this thinking through individuals like Tim Keller have entered into the thinking, the evangelical thinking in this country. Is it any wonder why we keep getting stats from George Barna and other people that our young people are moving away from a solid biblical view on things?
I don't believe that blacks, whites, Hispanics, I don't believe that a majority, and I would say a vast majority of Americans of any stripe, believe that garbage he just spouted. I don't believe, listen, if there was systemic racism in this problem, and if cops and were going around killing black folks for sport, like the BLM and others say there is, there would be a lot more people protesting and out on the streets than there are now.
Right.
You had your marches a few weeks ago, which was fine, peacefully done. I don't have a problem with that, even if I disagree with the message. That's America.
Right.
Listen, these people taking a knee during the football game, a few of them, I don't want to say their feelings aren't genuine, but I'm telling you, if you were the problems that they say exist don't exist, and they know it. And that's the reason there's not more massive protest. That's the reason they go to the march and then they go back to their job on Monday.
Right. If they really believe these things exist.
And they go on with their lives, blacks and whites working together, huh, every day. Yeah, there are racial biases that exist. And guess what? There always will, as long as there's sin in the world.
Right.
But to the scale that these BLM folks and others are trying to project on America, to say that they don't exist, and the reason there's not more outrage and more people protesting is because people know it's not nearly as bad as the BLM folks say that it is.
Right.
That's my view. Listen, you got LeBron James buying $30 million homes in California and claiming he's a victim of racism. Give me a break.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family, freedom.